everyone else. So as you've seen, we've gone rogue this morning and changed everything up. Actually, what we've done, we've changed it up so that we could have some more worship songs at the end. So if you were thinking we were going to get out of here in 30 minutes, that's also not going to happen. We're starting a series on worship, and we're going to be in that over the next few weeks, a series about being desperate to worship. And Kevin is also preaching this same message at the lake this morning with those who are there. So over the next few weeks, we'll look at what it means to worship and how worship is more than just worshiping through songs. We tend to put those things together more often than not, but worship is really something we do with our whole life. This morning, we're going to be in Mark chapter 14 for pretty much our entire time together. But before we jump there, I thought it would be appropriate to look at a few other passages. These are very similar. These are both visions that we have in the Bible. One is in Isaiah chapter 6, and one is in Revelation chapter 4. And I'm not going to read them, but I'm just going to describe what happens there. And both of these visions, like I said, are similar. They're visions that happen, and they see the throne room of God in heaven. Both Isaiah and John, they get this vision of what it looks like to worship in heaven. And there are seraphim and cherubim that are there that we just sang about. There are elders that it says are casting down their crowns before God. There are thousands and thousands of people who are gathered worshiping before the throne of God. Repeating things like, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty, who was and is to come. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord. His praise fills the whole earth." As you read these sections, it really seems like for all these creatures, for all these people who are there, when they're in the presence of God, their only response is to worship. Day and night, they repeat these phrases over and over again because that's the only appropriate response to being in the presence of God. And we're going to look at a passage about a woman in Mark chapter 14 who comes before Jesus. She's in his presence, and she does exactly what they do. She worships. So starting in verse 3 of that chapter, it says, "While he was in Bethany at the house of Simon the leper, as he was reclining at the table, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured it on his head, but some were expressing indignation to one another, 'Why has this perfume been wasted? For this perfume might have been sold for more than 300 denarii and given to the poor.' And they began to scold her. Jesus replied, 'Leave her alone. Why are you bothering her? She has done a noble thing for me. You always have the poor with you, and you can do what is good for them whenever you want, but you do not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body in advance for my burial. Truly I tell you, wherever the gospel is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her.'" Really, it's a pretty simple story. Jesus is at a person's house eating dinner, and this woman, we're told in other gospel accounts that this is Mary, the sister of Martha and Lazarus. And this woman comes, and she begins to anoint Jesus' body with perfume, which would have been a common practice in Jesus' time. She goes about doing it a little bit differently than what would have been traditional. We'll talk about that later. But as she's doing this act of worship, everyone else who's in the room begins to scold her and stare and question what she's doing. They make up an excuse about how she should have sold the perfume and used it to help the poor, but really what they're doing is just expressing the fact that they're not comfortable with the way that she's worshiping. I mentioned that Kevin is preaching from this passage as well, and it's been unique this week at the office to be able to discuss this passage. Normally, if I'm preaching or if Kevin is preaching, the other person is not, you know, studying the same text, and so it's been kind of neat to just bounce ideas off of each other and to just share some observations with one another. And One thing we talked about this week, and I thought was a really good point that he mentioned was, man, worship, it can be kind of a hot button issue within churches, right? There's a lot of instances we know about or stories we've heard about churches who have a lot of conflict when it comes to worship. And maybe it's not a church-wide thing, but maybe as an individual, we wish worship looked different on a Sunday morning. Maybe we don't like the songs that are played. We wish like different songs were played, or we think the music is too loud, or we think the music is too soft. We don't like it when people clap, because that is like way over the line, right? Or we really don't like it when people raise their hands, because that just maybe makes us uncomfortable. And we act just like the disciples do. We forget that worship has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with the music that's played or how it makes us feel or whether we like the songs that are played or not. Worship has everything to do with Jesus and showering him with praise and giving him the glory that he deserves. And when we lose sight of that, we tend to grumble and scold and complain, even if it's under our breath. But there's a different response that we see in the text. The disciples kind of missed it, but the woman, Mary, she understood what it meant to be in the presence of Jesus, and that the appropriate response when you're in the presence of God is to worship. And she does some things that we can, I think, glean from and apply to ourselves as well. The first thing that she did was she came ready to worship. I mean, she was prepared when she got there. This wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing that happened. She brought the jar of perfume with her. And this isn't, you know, your ordinary bottle of perfume that you would just happen to have with you, and she thought, oh, hey, this would be a good time to anoint Jesus and worship him. Before she left to go to Simon the leper's house, she had in her mind, I'm going to be entering into Jesus' presence, and so I need to worship him. This isn't an ordinary bottle of perfume. Normally, we'd be getting ready to go to camp, and unfortunately, that can't happen the way that it normally, you know, does. And there's a lot of things that I'm going to miss about camp. I love being away at camp. But there's one thing that I'm not going to miss, and that's the smell of Axe body spray. If you're not familiar with Axe body spray, 90% of junior high boys, that's like their go-to, that's the average deodorant, perfume, whatever you want to call it. I don't even know if it really counts as deodorant. But that's pretty typical. You walk into the dorm on a Wednesday in the middle of camp, and it's this mixture of hormones and sweat and, more than anything else, Axe body spray. Because that's the average thing for a middle school boy to carry around with them. This perfume, though, was not your average bottle that you would carry around. This is something that is very important to her. And we'll look at that a little bit more, but she came ready to worship. She was prepared to come into his presence. In church, whenever we gather together, before we do that, before we come into this room on 10:30 or 9 o'clock in these last few weeks, we need to prepare our hearts to worship as well. Worship is not just a light switch that we flick on at 10:30 and like, boom, we're ready to go. In fact, in Exodus 19, God tells Moses, hey, I'm going to be addressing the nation of Israel. And 3 days before, he says, tell them to get ready, because when they come before my presence, it's a big deal and they need to prepare themselves. A few weeks ago, I drug my guitar out of the closet because there was nothing else to do, right? And I don't really claim to be able to play guitar. I play around on guitar, but I wanted to mess around, and so I realized pretty quickly that it had been a while since I had played. All the calluses on my fingers were gone because it had been a few months. I really noticed it when I actually tried to play a song, and that was a bad deal. And so before all that, though, what made me really understand that it had been a while since I had picked up my guitar was as soon as I got it out of the case and I strummed it one time, it was out of tune. I mean, way out of tune. Changes in temperature and changes in humidity and the tension on the strings, all these things factor into a guitar staying in tune or not. And truthfully, it doesn't take a few months. It really could take a few days or a few weeks. And it gets out of tune pretty quickly. And I could have sat there and played it with it out of tune, and it would have sounded worse than it did even when I tried to play it. But it sounded a little bit better once I got it into the right tune. And our hearts, when it comes to worship, work the same way. We have to tune our hearts and get our minds shifted into a place where we are ready to come before God's presence to worship Him. Maybe that looks like a few different things for you. Maybe that means on a Sunday morning that you just take 5 minutes before you leave your house to just sit down and just admit, God, my mind has been in 1,000 different directions. I've been running the kids all over the place, and work has been crazy. And I know that right now I'm not really in a place where I can worship you the way I need to. And so I'm just asking that you help me get there. God, begin to tune my heart now for 10:30. Because I'm coming into your presence and it's a big deal, and I want to be able to worship you the way that I should. Maybe you're a young family and you're like, listen, it's a victory to get here dressed at 10:30. And so there's no way I have 5 minutes to do that on a Sunday morning. And if that's the case, maybe you need to do it on Saturday night before you go to sleep. And once the kids are in bed, maybe, again, you just take 5 minutes. God, tune my heart. Get me ready to be able to come in your presence. Maybe it's on the drive from your house to the church. You have a few worship songs that you just really enjoy and that really begin to get your focus on to Jesus. And so you put those songs on in the car for 15 minutes. Even if you never listen to worship music at any other time during the week, maybe that's the time that you set aside to begin to just get in the mindset where you're ready to worship. Or maybe you're just mindful of the clock on a Sunday morning and you're looking and you realize, man, it's 10:27. We're getting ready to start in a few minutes. I just want to be in my seat for 2 minutes before the music actually starts playing. I've made sure that I've greeted those that I want to talk to, or if I haven't, I'll just go talk to them later. But you're just ready and in your seat, knowing that, man, I just need to start shifting my focus to a place of worship. We need to come prepared to be in God's presence. Not only do we need to come prepared like the woman did, we need to come and give Jesus our full attention once we're here. In this account, we see that, man, the disciples are scolding her just openly. They are, you know, she's feeling the weight of the stares that just don't understand what she's doing. But as you read this story, it's almost like it's just her and Jesus in the room. She doesn't care what they're saying. She doesn't respond to their criticism. It doesn't make her stop what she's doing. She continues to worship in the way that she feels called to do. And her attention is fully fixed on Jesus. How often, I know I'm guilty of this, do we sit here or stand here and we may be saying the words or singing along, but our minds are anywhere but here. We're thinking about what we have to do after church ends or what we've got coming up with work the next week. Or maybe it's just the fact that we don't really focus on anything very much, right? I mean, our society has kind of trained us to not really focus for any length of time, right? And so maybe we just have a hard time focusing in, and and paying attention to what Jesus has for us when we come here on a Sunday morning. FDR, whenever he was president, got very annoyed with the long lines that he was forced to stand in and greet people. And one day he wanted to test out this theory he had. He always told his aides, like, when people are coming through these lines, no one's paying attention to what I'm saying anyway. And so he tested out his theory by greeting those who came by with a message that he thought would be, you know, shocking to them if they were paying attention. And one by one, as people came and shook his hand, he said, "I murdered my grandmother this morning." And just like he thought, every person continued to go throughout the line and say things like, "Keep up the good work, Mr. President. We're proud of you. You're doing a good job," and things like that. And it wasn't until the very last person in line, the ambassador from Bolivia, and FDR repeated what he'd been repeating and said, "I murdered my grandmother this morning." And the ambassador, without batting an eye, leaned in and whispered, "I'm sure she had it coming, sir," and gave him a wink and moved on. Church, how often do we come before the King and don't even pay attention to what he's trying to tell us? How often do we come into this room and not devote our attention to the one who's worthy of our praise? Because he deserves our complete focus and our complete attention. We need to come prepared. We need to come with our full attention. And we need to come completely surrendered before him. This woman, when she comes, I mentioned that anointing someone would have been a traditional practice in this time, but the way she does it is anything but traditional. Normally, you would take just a couple drops and pour it out, but as we read in the text, she takes the entire jar and pours all of it onto his head. The entire bottle of perfume is used in this act of worship. And the reason that that's important is, like we mentioned, this is an expensive bottle of perfume. In the text, it says about a year's worth of wages is what this could have been sold for. And it's not like she could have gone home and had a shelf full of other bottles like this. That wasn't the case. This would have been very likely her most prized possession. This would be something that you would hold on to, and maybe it's a nest egg that, man, whenever I don't have anything else, I could at least sell that bottle and be able to make ends meet. It would probably be something that was passed down like a family heirloom. I mean, this is really important to her. And so when she pours out the bottle and doesn't hold anything back, she's not just pouring out a bottle of perfume. She's pouring out her trust. She's pouring out her praise and her adoration, and she is pouring out her heart to Jesus, holding nothing back. And it's not the size of the gift that pleases Jesus. Just a few chapters earlier in Mark 12, we have the account of the poor widow that comes and drops two tiny coins into the offering. And Jesus says that she gave more than anyone else, not because it had any monetary value, but because it was everything that she had, and she was giving with her heart. Jesus wasn't impressed with the amount of the gift. He was impressed with the amount of her heart. He knew that as she was there worshiping him, that she was completely surrendered, completely devoted, completely focused on him and giving him the praise and honor and the glory that he deserved. I mentioned we're doing things a little bit differently, and we're going to end with a time of worship. The band's going to come back up. And we're going to sing some more songs to close out our service. Church, we are invited to come and worship Jesus this morning. We are invited to come and give him praise and honor and glory. We may not be standing in the throne room of God. We may not be in his presence with a bottle of perfume, but we are in his presence this morning. And just like he was worthy of the praise that was given to him in Isaiah, and just like he was worthy of the praise that was given to him in Revelation, and just like he was worthy of the praise that was given to him by the woman, he is worthy of our praise this morning. We serve a God who is everlasting and mighty and powerful. We could spend the rest of our lives, day and night, worshiping him, and it would not be enough because he is worthy of everything we have to offer him. Church, we are in his presence this morning. Will you worship? Stand and let's continue.